Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We fell in love with a girl and a guy. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, a look back at the Detroit duo known as the White Stripes. We take the band into the ring for a Soundcheck Smackdown and take some of your calls. And later, a live performance from the singer-songwriter Nicole Atkins and her band. But first, after a hiatus of several years, the Detroit-born, Grammy-winning garage rock band known as the White Stripes have called it quits. They said goodbye to fans by posting a farewell note on their website late last week, bringing an end to one of the most high-profile rock acts of the last decade. This track from 2001, Fell in Love with a Girl, is one of their best-known, but Meg and Jack White have been working steadily since they formed the White Stripes in 1997. And to help explain the story behind his hometown heroes, we've called in our friend Gary Graff, the Detroit-based music writer, to give us some background. Gary, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure.
Were you surprised at all by the announcement?
No, and I don't think there's anybody certainly within the Detroit music community who was, even though this was a hiatus and the White Stripes were out of sight. Everybody pretty much knew they were done, maybe as far back as 2007, but certainly within the last couple of years. It was a pretty open secret.
So 2007 was the last full-length record, Icky Thump, and since then Jack White's been doing many, many other things. He seems to be more ubiquitous than ever. But the White Stripes, give us a sense of why they were important to begin with.
Well, I think, first of all, they were just completely unusual. You know, when they emerged in 1997, There were not 100 guy girl guitar drum duos running around Detroit from which they sprung. So even in the rock community here in Detroit, they were unique and unusual. And yet, you know, what you would think about that as being a cutting edge type of band. You know, Jack especially, his embrace of and love of and reference to so many musical styles, be it classic rock, blues, folk, the whole package the sonic package they put together was just so unique and so different.
Well, was it unique and different in Detroit? I mean, I've always seen Detroit as, you know, the MC5 and Iggy and the Stooges. You know, there's a certain garage rock sound that I've always associated with Detroit, and which they certainly had.
See, the White Stripes certainly were of the garage rock movement. I almost, though, view them, John, more as woodshed rock. I mean, those Funhouse roots, those
right,
blues roots,
right.
those early rural roots that Jack brings to the sound and to his playing, that really was from, you know, completely other eras of not just rock music, but American music.
So in addition to the blues, would you say that some of the great Detroit rock bands of the 70s, even the 60s, were they forebears to the White Stripes?
Sure. I mean, I think you certainly can point to the MC5. You certainly can point to the Stooges, maybe even the early, you know, Bob Seger system.
Mm-hmm.
Just that raw, primitive, you know, the idea that you don't need to doll it up, you don't need to dress it up. It doesn't need to be too melodic.
MC5 being a good case in point. Back to 1969 for their hit Kick Out the Jams. From the Motor City, MC5, a classic example of classic garage rock from Detroit. Gary Graff, the Detroit-based music writer, with us, giving us a bit of context as we mark the end of Detroit's The White Stripes, who announced their retirement last week, late last week on their website. The thing with the MC5, Gary, is that, you know, they were kind of a regional powerhouse. Their reputation in the wider music community took a long time to build up, whereas the White Stripes seemed to pretty quickly go from, you know, Detroit musical heroes to a kind of a national exposure. How did that happen?
Well, it was a completely different trip than that, John. I don't know that I call the White Stripes musical heroes, Detroit heroes, between, let's say, 97 and 99, 2000. They were around, certainly the underground knew of them and, you know, really, you know, after scratching its head for a while, you really embrace them, but it really took Britain embracing the White Stripes, not dissimilar to what happened with the Strokes out of New York. You know, it was Britain that really embraced them, and then it came back to the U.S. where they became national heroes and also, you know, more of a heroic posture in Detroit. You know, around here in those early days, they were a respected curiosity, I think.
And how early were you cottoning on to what was happening with Jack and Meg White?
Well, I'm not gonna tell you that I was there at that first gig at the Gold Dollar in '97. I know there are. If everybody who says they were there, it would have been held at, you know, the Pontiac Silverdome or something. But I know I saw. I want to say it was the third or fourth show. And it was just, you know, it was the buzz about that. Jack already had a great reputation from other bands, you know, Goober and the Peas, The Go, Two Star Tabernacle. You know, people knew who he was and were, you know, and the word got around. Jack has this new thing he's doing. By the way, it's a little weird. And so people started to check it out. And, yeah, at the beginning, people were really scratching their head because it was so raw and so primitive and referencing so many different things that were not necessarily quote-unquote rock music. And then after you saw it a couple of times, you started to get it. And I think Jack and Meg themselves would acknowledge they got better exponentially each time they played.
So they go to Britain. The English love them. They come back. They've sort of been anointed the next big thing. How did the Detroit rock scene react? Was it, you know, have you guys in Detroit there always kind of held this group close?
I think so. I think initially, you know, there's a duality there. There were people who had been paying attention since 1997 or 98 from the beginning who were kind of a little put off that our secret was being embraced by the rest of the world. And so therefore, you know, white blood cells, you know, we know the other two albums. Those are much better, of course. And then you had others within Detroit who just kind of cottoned on to the White Stripes with white blood cells. And this was a discovery, you know, discovery of the new rock heroes in Detroit. So you did have that duality that I think happens with most artists and most acts.
Yeah, and of course that's the album that had the hit single "Fell in Love with a Girl." But there were a couple of records before that for the hardcore fans. Most of them, I would guess, in the Detroit area, which is where Gary Graff is, the Detroit-based music writer, giving us a little bit of background on the White Stripes as we head towards our Soundcheck Smackdown for this week. Gary, nice talking to you again.
Always a pleasure, John, and good luck down. You know, make sure you're ducking those punches.
The White Stripes is the name of the first album by the duo from 1999. Here's a little bit. In a moment, two critics debate whether Jack and Meg White deserve a heartfelt farewell or if we're better off without them. And then coming up later, singer-songwriter Nicole Atkins plays live music from her brand new album. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So, as we heard, Detroit served as the incubator for the rock duo, the White Stripes. But if the Motor City is where they found their footing, The rest of the world became their stomping ground. In just over 13 years, the duo released 6 studio albums, won 5 Grammy Awards, and sold 6 million albums in the U.S. alone. Some have hailed the band as media-savvy rock and roll originals. Others maintain they're a gimmicky, blues-borrowing bore. So, what sort of eulogy should we have for the band? Rest in peace or good riddance? It's this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And here with their post-mortem reflections on the White Stripes are Emily Rems, managing editor of Bust Magazine, and Phil Freeman, editor of the music site Burning Ambulance. Emily, Phil, to both of you, welcome back to Soundcheck. Phil, let me start with you. What do we say to the White Stripes? Do we say rest in peace or good riddance?
I'm going to go with good riddance, and I'm shocked they were broken up now. I thought they broke up in about 2008.
So for you, this was for me, a surprise in as much as you thought it had already happened.
Yes, anticlimactic at best.
Emily.
I'm definitely on the rest in peace side. Frankly, I'm surprised that you found anybody to debate me on this. Saying that you don't like the White Stripes is kind of being like, oh, I don't think this whole rock and roll thing is such a good idea. There's such a clear distillation.
Are you telling me we could not get somebody in this studio to say this whole rock and roll thing is not a good idea? Because I am here to tell you... As I check the web comments day after day, that there are people who will stand in line to make that very point.
Fair enough, but I still think it's shocking.
Well, what was it that, I mean, are you broken up to have perhaps your suspicions confirmed that there will be no more White Stripes?
My suspicions are confirmed. You know, as Gary was saying earlier, it's not a shock, but it's definitely a time for reflection to think back on how they really gave rock and roll such a needed infusion of authenticity at a time, you know, maybe like Marilyn Manson, I think at the time was like the biggest thing in rock and roll. And they really brought it back to the blues roots in a way that was so clear and powerful and authentic to the blues roots, but also that was so refreshing and modern and danceable and amazing. It just, I think that it changed the whole landscape for the decade.
How do you respond to that, Phil?
Well, I'm going to start with a quote from the writer Joe Carducci, who said, "Record collectors shouldn't start bands." And that's how I feel about Jack White. I think that the White Stripes were more an art project than a band. Especially at the beginning, and they
do you mean because of like the presentation, the red and white,
the
candy
presentation, the
outfits,
sound,
and
the fact that he went with a drummer who couldn't count to 4, and then when he began to believe his own press hype and decide to become Led Zeppelin with 2 people, you know, it just, I mean, by the time of Get Behind Me, Satan, they really just completely lost it. He had become a firm believer in everything David Frick had to say about him, and. You know, that was just
you mean the music
critic? The music critic for Rolling Stone, who once described Meg White as having, quote, a fluid sense of time, which made me laugh harder than anything I'd read in Rolling Stone in months.
Emily, I happen to know that you get behind the drum kit every now and again. Give me your view of Meg White as a drummer.
I do get behind the drum kit, and I will say that I learned to play the drums as an adult because of Meg White. And, you know, I went to Ladies Rock Camp in Brooklyn and I was like, I want to sound like that. I want to sound assertive and powerful and heavy. And, like, I just thought that she was the perfect, she had the perfect sound for that song. And she didn't rely on high-speed tricks and fills. And that might freak people out who are, like, all into metal and love double bass and all that stuff. But she was... She had the exact right sound for that band. Her beats sounded like a heartbeat. They sounded like war drums. They sounded like fists just like pounding on the walls of a padded cell. It was evocative.
You suggested that we take something from the first White Stripes record called The White Stripes, Stop Breaking Down.
Yeah.
This really, you talked about blues, authenticity, the American roots. That's in action.
Yes.
Here. This is from the first album by The White Stripes.
Your mind.
Stop Breaking Down from the first album by the White Stripes, 1999. The band is no more, announcing late last week on their website that they are splitting up. I mean, they've sort of been apart for many, many years. Did that bother you, Phil, that whole we're brother and sister thing when they were actually a divorced ex-husband and wife? I mean, was that part of the shtick?
No, I thought it was part of the shtick, which was fine, and it got even funnier when Jack married his next wife, who happens to also match the band's color scheme, being an extraordinarily pale redhead. But
you're talking about Karen Elson, the model and singer
who
has been on Soundcheck.
I think... Going back to the subject of Meg White, I think the problem I have with her is that she gets this kind of affirmative action cheer from critics for whom she has a certain appeal. Meanwhile, the world includes Samantha Maloney from Hole or Cindy Blackman, who backed Lenny Kravitz, who are astonishing female drummers who don't get nearly the recognition that she got. And it seems like a big injustice to me.
Phil Freeman is with us. He's editor of the music site Burning Ambulance. Emily Rems is managing editor of Bust Magazine. We are debating what kind of send-off to give the White Stripes. Soundcheck listeners, what do you think? Are you playing a requiem for the White Stripes, or are you dancing on their grave? You can call us, 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Give us your appreciation, or not, of the White Stripes, or leave a comment at our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And let's check in with our producer, Joel Meyer, in the control room where those comments come in, because, Joel, there are some in over the transom already. Hang on just a second there, Joel. We'll get back to you in just a moment. We got you? Ah, there you are.
So, John, our listener Okie Dokie from Manhattan agrees with Phil Freeman, and Okie Dokie is no fan of Meg White's skills behind the kit. Here's what this listener left. As the expression goes, a band is only as good as its drummer. Good riddance to yet another overhyped band. Jeremy writes, my only question now is how we get Jack White to retire. Now, siding with Emily Rems, Christian posted this on our Facebook page. Oh, Jack and Meg will be sorely missed. They arrived during a malaise of poppy, clear channel blah music and showed what two creative, flavorful, passionate musicians could do. And Freddie just posts simply, yeesh, what's with all the hate?
So there are calls and comments that we want to get to as we debate the legacy of the White Stripes. But, Emily, it strikes me that, you know, you and Phil, when we asked you to kind of nominate songs to, you know, represent your respective positions, both of you chose the same song, Seven Nation Army, which, for my money, is still their best song.
I love it.
So, I mean, for you, is this kind of the distilled essence of the White Stripes?
It could be. I mean, it's got all those elements. You can see the clear line from Sunhouse and Robert Johnson up through the MC5, up through the Stooges, into a very modern sensibility. I feel like that song really incorporates all of those elements.
Phil, you also suggested that we play this to bolster your side of
it. Yeah, I feel like that's the beginning of the end. I did not hear the first two albums. I became aware of them when I saw the video for "Fell in Love with a Girl," and I really
as
liked
most
that.
Of it us
was,
did. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a fun, quick, you know, garage punk song. And then they attempted to become this sort of bloated arena rock thing while still being only two people, and I just felt like it didn't work. I felt like it was they were biting off way more than they could chew, and the albums that followed, I thought, proved my point pretty well. I mean,
well, this is from the album Elephant from 2003. It is the hit song Seven Nation Army, and on both sides of the divide, our guests pointing this out to represent their very different points of view.
Message coming from my eyes, it says,
Seven Nation Army, big hit for the White Stripes. And Emily Rems pointing to this as an example of everything right with the band, and Phil Freeman pointing to this very same song as an example of where it all went wrong for the duo of Jack and Meg White, who late last week announced that they are the White Stripes no more. There are calls on the line. Our number is 212-433-9692. Which side of this soundcheck smackdown are you on? 212-433-WNYC. Aaron is with us from Brooklyn. Aaron, I understand you're a drummer. Is that right?
I've been playing drums since I was a little kid.
And what do you think of we're sort of getting into it, Meg White, great drummer, bad drummer, what do you think?
I think she's great. You mentioned the drummer from Lenny Kravitz earlier. I feel like she's playing this really idiomatic, kind of stale stuff. And Meg White is doing this kind of post-punk minimalism meets Bonham thing in a really inventive way.
So it's not all about the fills and the double bass pedals and all that kind of stuff. You like the sort of stripped-down, minimalist approach to the drums.
Yeah, it's raw and her feel is just really heavy. She comes in behind the beat in a really interesting way.
So, Phil, if someone comes in behind the beat in an interesting way, it's no longer a mistake, right? I mean, if she's coming in behind the beat unintentionally, mm-hmm. that's bad drumming.
Right.
But if it's intentional, then it becomes interesting drumming, doesn't it?
Well, it's hard to say, because there's a famous quote from Brian Eno who said, "Honor your mistakes as hidden intention."
Right.
So who's to say, really? But
all right, let's talk about Jack for a minute. You know,
right.
Joel read that comment from one of our listeners saying, "Now, how do we get Jack to retire?" I mean, Emily, he is everywhere, it seems, you know, producing records. He's got three different bands that he fronts.
Yeah. And
is there too much Jack White in our lives?
I think he's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of interest. He's bringing back music by amazing women. He brought Wanda Jackson back. He produced Loretta Lynn. I think anybody who's opposed to his working in the music industry is probably sexist.
Phil, are you opposed to Jack White working in the music industry?
No.
Be careful how you answer.
I mean, he can do what he likes, but I feel, you know, without having heard the Wanda Jackson record, I'm not sure she needed his help, except in the sense of bringing her, you know, to the awareness of people who are unaware of her solely through fault of their own.
Right. But in fact, what you just said is exactly what has happened, of course, is mm-hmm. that people have heard, oh, Jack White has produced this record by this Wanda Jackson. Who is Wanda Jackson?
Right. And that's their problem. You know, I've been listening to Wanda Jackson since, you know, forever. So where have you been is sort of my response, you know, and it's.
Well, but Jack White has certainly done that, you know, whether whoever is at fault, you know, and you could certainly share the blame across the record industry that kind of shunted her aside for a while. The fact is that Jack White has continued to kind of shine a spotlight on other artists, other styles of music, for better or worse, and whether it's better or worse is up to our listeners in the Soundcheck Smackdown. Let's see what some of the commenters are saying. Joel?
Our listener Gary from the upper left side doesn't like the White Stripes, but likes Jack White in the documentary It Might Get Loud with Jack White, The Edge, and Jimmy Page. And John, I'm also noticing a trend going on right now on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. It's this time-honored tradition in music fandom known as Everyone Likes the Old Stuff. Self-amused hipster seeks bassist is the name of one of our listeners, and this person writes, White Stripes was a gimmick band. We got bored with them years ago. And G. Chadsey from New York writes, I loved some White Stripes albums throughout the years, but I find Jack White's huffy self-importance tedious to the point where I can't stand the sound of his voice. And Vinny from New Jersey writes, I found the White Stripes songs to be sonic junk food. They were really delicious at first, and I wanted to have a lot of it, but ultimately I wound up getting sick on that ridiculous voice of Jack White.
Emily, they did go through a period around the time of Get Behind Me, Satan, the 2005 record, where they were experimenting with marimbas and mm-hmm. things like that. And some of their fans were not happy. They wanted the duo, you know, the electric guitar and the drums. So then they pulled back with the last album, Icky Thump,
and scored well with critics and up on the charts and stuff. Do you see Icky Thump as kind of classic White Stripes, or is this sort of what one of those listeners was saying, where it was really good at first and then by the end it's just kind of, yeah, I've had this before?
I prefer the older stuff, but artists should be allowed to experiment. And really interesting things were still coming out of that. The song Icky Thump is a really interestingly constructed song. And Back and Get Behind Me, Satan, My Doorbell, if you listen to that, that's a pretty iconic track as well. I don't think it should be discounted.
The song Icky Thump, Phil, for you, is this a tune that lives up to its name?
Yes. I thought the guitar noises, you know, I mean, I'm a fan of noise rock guitar and stuff like that, but I thought I preferred their catchier early material to this sort of distorted lurching, you know. And the other later songs, Blue Orchid and also My Doorbell, were ones that really, I could see where they were going, but they didn't work for me at all. And it is White's voice is a big problem, and as was his sort of Johnny Depp dressed as Michael Jackson kind of look in those later years.
Jack White and Meg White on the drums, Icky Thump from the album of the same name. Icky Thump from 2007, title track of the what turned out to be the final album by the White Stripes, although none of us knew it then. What do you think, Emily, Phil, did Jack and Meg, do you think they had some inkling in 2007 that maybe this was coming to an end?
I think probably when Meg's anxiety problems caused them to have to cut off their Canadian tour and cancel their UK tour, that was probably a good indicator that maybe things weren't working for them anymore. And, you know, I don't think anybody's to blame for that. That just kind of happens.
Phil?
Yeah, I think there was probably some internal awareness, yeah.
What about, you know, the ultimate legacy of the band? I mean, it's just a few days since they posted on their website the fact that they were retiring, they were splitting up. They made clear that it was not for health reasons or because they didn't love the music or anything like that. What will their legacy be, Emily?
I think their legacy is going to be seen more as like a timeline, like in the same way that the Rolling Stones really brought attention to Muddy Waters and Howling Wolf at the time that they were very popular in the 60s, and the way the White Stripes really brought Robert Johnson and Son House to new people that probably had never heard them before, a lot of the younger fans. I think that there's going to be more bands out there who keep returning to the roots and that they're going to be a part of that legacy.
Phil?
I think their legacy is Fell in Love with a Girl, Seven Nation Army, done. Two hit singles, you know, there you go.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the covers of an old blues tune that they recorded over the years from the 2000 album, Die Style. This is the Son House song called Death Letter. Actually, what we're hearing is Let's Shake Hands. This is from the 2010 live release called Under Great White Northern Lights. Yeah, that'll do. We can end with that. We've been debating the legacy of the White Stripes with Emily Rems, managing editor of Bust Magazine, and Phil Freeman, editor of the music site BurningAmbulance.com. Emily, Phil, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks
a lot.
Still to come, Jersey-born singer Nicole Atkins has started afresh with a new label and a new band, and she'll play live in our studio next.